I'm Rachel New, and welcome back to season two of On My Last Eggs.
And I was just irritable with life. I just was really short-tempered, and she said, just think you need your period, because some of my friends get quite irritable just before their period. And then I suddenly realised that I hadn't had a period for about 5 months. And I went, my goodness, Sophie, I'm actually menopausal. She went, oh, don't say that. That makes you sound really old.
I, like millions of other women worldwide, am navigating the wild throes of perimenopause. And over the next few weeks, I'll be lifting the lid on what that whole messy, confusing journey entails, with plenty of lols and WTFs along the way.
And it just a penny dropped then. This is what people tell me all the time, and I'm not picking it up myself.
I'm very excited to welcome my first guest of season two, the doyen of menopause, on the show. I don't know if you've been described as a doyen.
No, before. I haven't actually.
I think you are one. It's the incredible Dr. Louise Newson. Welcome. How are you?
Oh, thanks, Rachel. I'm fine. Thank you very much.
And you are, you know, hugely important to a lot of women, I think, because you appeared to be the first and only person really overtly talking about menopause. The first thing I ever saw or heard about menopause was you on YouTube a few years ago. And I was like, oh my God, this woman's talking so much sense. This is all the weird things that are happening to me that my doctor just shrugs at and says, I don't know what that is. It's nothing. Don't worry about it. I want to start by asking you, when did you first realise as a GP that menopause was a big problem, was under-discussed, under-diagnosed, you know, and under-dealt with?
Do you know what? I never realised as a GP, because as a hospital doctor, even as a GP, I would just see and help the people that presented in front of me. And it was only actually after I did some training, because I really enjoy menopause work, which is a good job, seeing as that's all I do.
I was going to say that is a good job, because that's like all everything you do.
It is the most rewarding thing. You know, it's really hard as a GP, as you can imagine. And there's a lot of things you can't do to make people better. But menopause is one of the few things that people actually really thank you for, because you often transform their life and obviously improve their future health. But so I've always found it sort of rewarding myself. And then when I did some more training, I wanted to do a dedicated menopause clinic. And as you probably know, I couldn't get a job in the NHS because there wasn't such thing as a dedicated NHS menopause clinic that I could set up near where I live, because the resources weren't available through the NHS. So my trainer said to me, set up a private clinic. And I said, no, I don't want to work in private medicine. Why the hell would I do that when I've worked so hard in the NHS for so many years? And she said, well, that's the only way you'll get to help other women. So I sat on it for a while. And then a lot of my friends were telling me that they were feeling very low, very flat, not interested, headaches, muscle pains, not motivated, some hot flushes. And a lot of them were telling me that they've been given a drug called citalopram or venlafaxine or sertraline. And I'm saying, well, they're antidepressants, you're not depressed. They said, well, my doctor said I can't have anything else. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to set up a clinic just to help some of the friends, my friends, and some of the mums from school, actually. So then when I set up my clinic, was the same time I launched my website. And I quite quickly saw women from all over the country then, who were coming to me telling me that they'd not just had symptoms for a few months, but a few years. And many of them had given up their jobs. Many of them, their partners had left. And quite a few of them had actually felt so low that they just didn't see a future. And I was thinking then was when I thought, my goodness, actually, this is really awful what's happening to women. And then because I have got teenage children, my older daughter showed me how to use Instagram, and I thought, right, I'll just post every day and see what happens. And then these women started to just come out and just tell me their awful stories, and I thought, actually, this is huge. So it was only then that I thought, do you know what, I can't do this on my own, and I certainly can't keep quiet about it, because as a doctor, I don't want anyone to suffer. And I also really want to practice evidence-based medicine. And I thought, this is a complete injustice to women, what's happening. And actually, people aren't listening to the evidence. So we've got to try and marry the two up. So the last 3.5 years since I opened my clinic, that's all I've been trying to do, really, is reach women and help healthcare professionals who, many like me, have had no formal menopause training. I do feel like I throw sandbags at a tsunami, though, because it's such a big job that needs to be done.
It's a huge job, and it's not going to stop, is it? It's not like you can clear menopause up.
No.
It's going to keep coming. But hopefully it's going to be easier and better for future generations, thanks to people working so hard like you. And it's been a big year for menopause, hasn't it? It's been,
Yeah.
there's been the Davina documentary, which, I think really reached a huge number of people. And things like the Women's Health Survey, things like that, questions just haven't been asked before and now are starting to be asked. So hopefully things are going to change. What about your own menopause journey?
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a joke.
I was going to say, were you like the rest of us? Did you go, what's this? I didn't know this is menopause.
Yeah, so I did some specialist training, and there were a couple of courses that I wanted to go on. And I remember one actually was an evening course, and my husband had come home from work early to look after the children. And he came home and said, right, you can go now. And I was in my yoga stuff, but I hadn't done yoga because I just didn't feel like doing it. And I looked at him, I said, no, I'm not going because it's raining. And he went, what do you mean it's raining? Just get in your car and go. I said, no, I just don't feel like it. And he said, well, what's the matter with you? I said, I don't know. I'm just not interested in anything. And he said, well, have you done some yoga? Because yoga often clears my head, makes me feel better. I said, no, I don't want to do it. My joints are a bit stiff and sore. And I just can't be bothered, actually. And he's like, Louise, what's you look rubbish. What's wrong with you? And this sort of went on. And then I was also writing the menopausedoctor.co.uk website, and there was a huge amount of information in there. And as you know, I don't get any funding for it, so obviously I did it on my own. Took hours, but I kept thinking I need to stay up late and work, because I've always worked quite late into the night. But I kept saying to my husband, I feel like I've been drugged. I'm really tired, but I can't be pregnant. I've been sterilized. But it's that awful, overwhelming fatigue, as some of you know, who've been pregnant might have had. And I go to bed, and then I'd wake up at like 2, 3 in the morning thinking, why have I woken up now? I'm so tired. I can't get back to sleep. And my husband would be snoring next to me. Sometimes I'd be covered in sweat. Sometimes I wouldn't. And I'd think, oh, what's happening to me? I feel really ill and I don't know what's happening. This is really weird. And then every day I'd be writing on my website, joint pains, muscle stiffness, fatigue, memory problems, reduced motivation, really common symptoms of the menopause and perimenopause. And every day I was getting these symptoms, but it wasn't me I was writing about. It was about other women. And I'd lecture doctors and say, it's not just about flushes and sweats. We have to think about these other symptoms. And I was there as, Mrs. Perimenopausal woman aged 45. And I hadn't realized until after about 5 or 6 months, my middle daughter, who was about 11 then, maybe 12, I was just getting cross with her, and I was just irritable with life. I just was really short-tempered. And she said to me, Mummy, I just think you need your period, because some of my friends get quite irritable just before their period. And then I suddenly realized that I hadn't had a period for about 5 months. And I went, my goodness, Sophie, I'm actually menopausal. She went, oh, don't say that. That makes you sound really old. And it just the penny dropped then. And I thought, actually, this is what people tell me all the time, and I'm not picking it up myself. And I'm a menopause specialist. That's quite embarrassing. But then also, I then thought, right, I really need help, because I was struggling to remember really simple things. But that was a real struggle at work. And I kept looking at my examination couch in the corner of my room, thinking, I just want to sleep, actually. I just want to lie down. I'm not interested in the next patient, which is really unlike me, because I'm always self-motivated and very self-driven. I just couldn't be bothered. So then I went to my GP, but my GP practice were just not keen on prescribing HRT. So it was a real battle, actually, for me to find help. And then I thought, this is shocking. And then I started to feel a bit better with some HRT. But then when the dose was changed and I started to take testosterone as well, my brain just started to work again. And I thought, wow, this is incredible, actually. I can function, I can think, I can do 100 things at once. But then I thought, actually, most women aren't as privileged as me. They can't make the diagnosis, they can't get the right help. Actually, this is awful. This is beyond awful. So it's made me drive even harder, actually, to try and reach as many women as possible, because it's not just white middle class women like me who suffer. It's every single woman, regardless of her ethnicity, regardless of her culture, regardless of her background. And a lot of women suffer far worse than me, but it was still a real struggle. And I've known my husband for 31, nearly 32 years, and I would have left him because his breathing annoyed me. Just him being there asleep next to me when I wasn't asleep was really frustrating. And that's not fair on him. But People do. They relationships go, families disappear. It's horrible actually for a lot of women. And I'm sorry to come on this being so doom and gloom, but it is awful for a lot of people. But also for me as a doctor, I really worry about the health risks of us not having, you know, our hormones. So I personally take HRT not just because I want to carry on working as a doctor, but I really want to try and avoid dementia and osteoporosis. They're my two big fears, I suppose, having doctored so many women with these conditions. So actually to take a treatment that reduces the risk of both of those as well as other diseases, well, it's a game changer, isn't it?
And it's probably a huge relief for women to hear you say that the menopause crept up on you like it does for so many of us. I've got lots of questions for you, but also I wanted to give listeners to On My Last Eggs the chance to ask you some questions today, because this is very privileged access. This first question is from Essa Jane, and she says, "Hi, I've been confirmed as menopausal and have been told that I'm not suitable for HRT as a sibling had breast cancer and my mother died of endometrial cancer. I was offered antidepressants as an alternative. Is this correct? And if not, is there any advice so I could go armed to my GP? Thank you."
Yeah, so a lot of women get told they can't have HRT. And there's a couple of things that I think of. Firstly, you can never say never to anyone. Women who have had a family history of any type of cancer, especially breast cancer, they often get told they can't take HRT. But actually, if you look at the evidence, there's no evidence to support that statement, because women who have had a family history of breast cancer may have an increased personal history of breast cancer. Certainly some women who've got the BRCA gene, they have an increased risk of breast cancer. But taking HRT will not increase that risk any further. We know that most types of HRT actually don't have an increased risk of breast cancer associated with them. If they do, it's not statistically significant. And we know that women who take any type of HRT actually have a lower risk of dying from breast cancer. So that's very reassuring. So the risk to that woman will be there whether she takes HRT or not. On my Menopause Doctor website, there is a booklet we've written with the charity Target Ovarian Cancer for women with an increased risk of cancer. And then we've also got a fact sheet for women with an increased family history risk of cancer. So because some women who, for example, might have the BRCA gene, might have an increased risk of ovarian cancer, have their ovaries removed because of the risk of ovarian cancer. Once their ovaries are removed, they get plunged into the menopause, but they're told, no, you can't have HRT. And usually these women can. It's very hard challenging a healthcare professional, but I think if someone is not sure that the advice they've been given is correct, then I would say, well, could you let me know why you're telling me that? And if the doctor says, well, because you've got an increased risk, well, could you tell me why HRT will increase my risk? And have you got any studies or evidence to support what you're doing? Because I think that's really important, actually, because most of the time the doctors will not be able to provide evidence, and if they can, well, then that's really important, actually. So we should look very balanced. It's very easy to look something up on the internet and take it for face value, and even as doctors, you know, we can be given a study and be told that's correct. And that's what happened in 2002, this disastrous Women's Health Initiative study, that we were just told a take-home message from it: HRT causes breast cancer. But none of us have got time or actually the expertise to dig out all the stats and work it out properly. And you need experts to do that. But that's very important that we're very balanced in the evidence that we're given. So she really needs to probably see someone else or to go back and explore.
So a little bit of gentle challenging might be in order. Thank you very much for that. Here's a question from Emma. If your GP has refused you HRT on the basis that you're not in menopause, i.e. your periods haven't quite stopped yet, and insists that the list of perimenopausal symptoms is just anxiety, for which they offered antidepressants, what do I do/say to convince them that my symptoms are perimenopause and not just anxiety? I'm logging my symptoms via the Balance app. but what other info can I go armed to my appointment with?
It's really sad, isn't it, to hear stories where women aren't believed. And I think this is not just about the menopause. I think women in general are often not believed or listened to. And I think it's really important. It's great to log the symptoms on the free app Balance. Within the app, you can download a health report, and that can be very useful to start a conversation with your GP or other healthcare professional, because it will have all the symptoms together with the questionnaire. We'll monitor, track any periods that you have, and then I think it's also important to read or have read some of the NICE guidance, the menopause guidance from the National Institute of Health and Care Excellence, because that's what the gold standard, that's what we should be working at as healthcare professionals. And I think if you go with your symptoms and say, look, I think actually I am perimenopausal, my periods have changed, I'm getting these symptoms, and I have read that HRT might be an option for me, and I would like to explore that, and I would really like to go away either with a prescription or directions of who I can see, who I can get a prescription from. Now, one of the problems for doctors, and I'm not here to be rude about doctors because it's really difficult for them, is that HRT is actually only licensed for postmenopause. So you have to be officially menopausal, so not had a period for a year, before you can officially get HRT. Now, license and regulation is very different. So all the HRT certainly that we prescribe is regulated, so it's proper medicine, if you like, but it's not always licensed for the right indications, and it doesn't really matter as long as it's a proper product. So if you think, for example, there's a lot of medication we give to babies and children. Very common example is something we give for reflux that loads of babies have. It's not licensed for babies, actually. It's licensed for adults, but we know it works and it's safe. So there's lots of things that we give as doctors that are not licensed. But if we've got evidence to support them and guidelines that state we're allowed to, then that's fine. It protects us, if you like. And this is the same with HRT. The evidence is very clear that the earlier a woman starts taking HRT to top up her missing hormones or replace their missing hormones if her periods have stopped, the better for her future health. And so we need to think about, why are we not taking HRT? Why are we being refused HRT? Because we know that the earlier we take it, our symptoms will improve because we're replacing the missing hormones. But more importantly, we're actually reducing our risk of these conditions such as heart disease, osteoporosis, diabetes, dementia, and actually reducing our future death, because we know women who take HRT are less likely to die from all causes. So we need to sort of challenge in a positive way to our healthcare professionals. And actually, as you know, we've recently founded the Menopause Charity. And on the website, themenopausecharity.org, there's under the menopause section, I've actually written an article about how to get the most out of your GP consultation. And there's some tips there that are worth looking at, really, to really make it into a very positive consultation. And, you know, there's a lot of the Davina effect going on at the moment, where people have gone, and lots of people are telling me that they have never prescribed so much HRT as they have in the last week. Some doctors are loving it. Some doctors are feeling very challenged by it. But I think as an individual, we need to take control of our health and our future, and we need to help our doctors, but not in a confrontational, angry woman sort of way, but in a, do you know what, I really want my future health to be positive, and I'm going to do as much as I can with my lifestyle and my well-being, but I would want, like, my missing hormones, in the same way that if I had an underactive thyroid gland, you would give me thyroxine, because that's all it is. It's just another hormone, isn't it, that we're missing.
It's interesting to hear about the licensing issue. In our professional and our normal life, we all operate to different guidelines that we give ourselves. Some people are real sticklers for rules, you know. So you can see why some doctors would automatically, without even wanting to sort of investigate it further, go, well, if you're still having periods, I mean, my GP certainly is very resistant to anything while I'm still having periods. Now I've got the Mirena coil, so I'm not having periods. I don't know if that's the coil or my menopause, but luckily the coil really sorted out a lot of my symptoms, so I haven't gone any further. You know, I've had a few conversations with her where it's been a little bit, you know, not confrontational, but she's sort of battered me back. And I'm 55, and now I'm at the point where, you know, I probably do need to be thinking about HRT, but then I feel a bit of a fraud because I'm not having really terrible symptoms.
Yeah, so. But that's the whole thing. thing though, Rachel, you don't need to have awful symptoms. You know, no one gets a medal or a telegram from the Queen to say, well done, you've battled through loads of symptoms. What's really difficult is, as you know, there's no blood test for the menopause or the perimenopause. You know, obviously if someone's had their ovaries removed, as I've said, they'll become menopausal, but those people who've had a hysterectomy or have got a marina coil, and you can't go by your periods. So you can only go by your symptoms, but symptoms are often very vague, they're very insidious. It's like, is it life? Is it lockdown? You know, what is it? Is it part of getting older? And so it's very difficult. But often with women, I'll often say, well, try some HRT. It's so safe. The estrogen through the skin as a patch, gel or spray has no risk of clot, no risk of stroke. In fact, it has a lower risk of breast cancer even. So there's no harm. The same with testosterone, actually, is very low risk. So try it for 3 months and then see how you feel. And 99% of women will come back and go, wow, gosh, I just feel I've got more energy. I just feel better. I had a few joint pains or a few headaches. They've all gone. So, and if people don't feel better, they stop it. It's all reversible.
Hearing you talk about your early signs of menopause, because I think mine were quite similar in the sense that, you know, just brain fog, struggling to perform, I suppose, at the level that I thought, you know, I performed that before. And yeah, I probably do need some HRT. It's probably time, isn't it?
Yeah.
So a bit of a confession. Since talking to Dr. Louise Newson, I finally went to my own doctor to ask about HRT. I've kind of made a little bit of an audio diary for you.
I started making this podcast 9 months ago, and I started making it because I was having so many problems with my perimenopause. But until now, I hadn't really seriously considered HRT because I thought I wasn't bad enough. And maybe I just thought, well, it sounds stupid, doesn't it? I won't take a share of HRT that someone else could have. And you hear about all these stories about how it can be so hard to get hold of HRT, to get anyone to take you seriously. And I was kind of in that category. Anyway, fast forward, conversation with Dr. Louise Newson. And I'm thinking, I should be having a conversation with my GP about menopause. And so I have asked online for a phone consultation, because that's what you can get these days, right? And I'm going to have a phone consultation about HRT. And it sounds ridiculous, having been making this podcast for so long, but I'm very excited and I'm a little bit nervous about it. Well, what do you know? I just got off the phone from a doctor, not my regular doctor, because apparently she retired about 4 weeks ago. I was so nervous to ask or to even really say what it was I was calling up about. Started with the old chat about my vagina. It's always my opening gambit, how that had been giving me problems. But now that my symptoms were more than just that, that my joint pain is definitely giving me problems. My brain fog's driving me nuts. My terrible itchy skin is back, you know, yada, yada, yada. I could go on. And I said, you know, I thought maybe I ought to be thinking about considering HRT. And she said, yeah, sounds like you should. And then just proceeded to tell me, you know, that I could either have a tablet or that I could have a patch or that I could have gel. And it was a brilliant chat. And in 2 days' time, I will be beginning. I'll be starting and I can't wait. My HRT journey begins here, kids. So my lovely partner's just come in from the shops and he picked up my HRT from the chemist on the way. He's just come in and thrown a bag down in front of me while I was in a Zoom meeting. And I'm like, oh, it's like Christmas. So here it is. I have got Estragel. Oh, this is like one of those box opening things they do on YouTube. So I've got the little pump thing out. I'm going to, oh my gosh, the instructions are huge. How to prepare your new pump pack. Oh gosh, it's like reading instructions for a game. I hate instructions for a game. There's always too much stuff to read. Okay, my plan to use my pump at night has just been scuppered by the fact that it says here, this is the good job I read this, avoid close skin contact with your partner for 1 hour after application. Well, we usually have a bit of skin contact when we go to bed because it's nice to snuggle, isn't it, right? Nice to snuggle. And there's another section here where it says, if you believe your estrogel has been transferred to another person, brackets man or child, wash the area that may have been affected immediately with soap and water. So obviously I shouldn't be getting in close contact. So I think I'm going to do it in the morning, which is a little bit frustrating because now it means I have to wait till tomorrow. Oh! Okay, the morning is here. The time is nigh for me to get pumping. Oh, there's a lot of it. That is a lot of gel. What did they say? I'm doing my arm. It's like hand sanitizer, basically. But you know when you go into a shop and you go, oh, yeah, I'll sanitize. You know when you do a pump and there's more than you planned getting your hand and you're like, oh, it's everywhere. Okay, I've rubbed it in. Oh, I should have read this first. Do not apply near the breasts or the genital area. Done. First dose of HRT administered. Woo!
Well, that's me now on HRT, slathering on the gel. Let's go back to Louise. I've had a question in from Sally. Can you ever be too old to start HRT?
No, is the short answer. No, not at all. I mean, when you look at the guidelines and the evidence, it's very clear that women who start HRT within 10 years of their menopause, so on average, that's women under the age of 60, there's the most benefit for future health. But that doesn't mean that if a woman's over 60 or more than 10 years since her last period, that she's past it or she can't have HRT. Because the WHI study, the study that came out in 2002, showed that there were some risks with heart disease and stroke and clot with women, especially women who've been over the age of 60 starting HRT. That's where the concerns come from. But the HRT they used in that study was tablet estrogen and an older type of progesterone, so not the body identical through the skin estrogen and the natural progesterone that we prescribe now. So they're very different products. You can't really compare them at all, actually. So when we start a woman who's older, you do it very gradually. So we start the estrogen through the skin as a patch, gel or spray, and then the progesterone is a natural progesterone. You just take one at night time. Our oldest patient is actually 91 who started HRT. She decided to treat herself for her 90th birthday, and then she waited a little bit and then came and saw us. Not everyone gets better quite as quickly, because the longer you are without hormones, the more your body adjusts without the hormones. And so sometimes it can take a little while, but absolutely people can consider it. And then the other symptom that's very, very common is symptoms related to vaginal dryness, because we have estrogen receptors on the lining of our vagina, but also our bladder as well. So we know around 80%, so 8 out of 10 women will experience symptoms related to vaginal dryness. And that's not just pain during intercourse, it can be pain sitting down, discomfort walking, urinary symptoms, urinary frequency, getting up to go to the toilet at nighttime, bit of dribbling, urgency. And those symptoms actually really improve with vaginal estrogen, which is very different to HRT. It's just used locally. And most women actually would benefit from that treatment, whereas we know only about 8% do. So, you know, not every woman who's older needs systemic HRT, but pretty much all of them would need vaginal estrogen. So that's another symptom that is just not talked about or discussed or considered a lot of the time.
That's really good to hear, Sally. If you are older and thinking about HRT, there you go, you can have it any time. Let's talk a little bit about vaginal symptoms, because that is, I guess, one of the last taboos around menopause. You know, people are talking more and more about menopause now than they have before, but people don't want to talk about their vaginas, or they don't want to, you know, they're embarrassed about it. It's interesting to hear you say only 8% of women will pursue some treatment for their vagina.
We know that even only around half of people who mention it in a consultation actually come away with treatment. And again, I think this is because doctors are a bit scared of hormones, and they just haven't always been given the right education to know what to prescribe sometimes for women. And a lot of women just think, oh, it's part of getting older. It's just the way it is, but it shouldn't be. I don't know, it's a weird term, because vaginal dryness isn't actually right. A lot of women, they don't find any dryness. They just find it feels different, or it's a bit itchy or sore, or just people sometimes have more discharge rather than less. Or some people just find find sitting down for long periods of time hard, or like I say, the urinary symptoms that occur. So we now call it GSM, or genitourinary syndrome of the menopause. So we're thinking about urinary symptoms as well. A lot of people have prolapse, you know, and that can really improve. Prolapses can really improve with vaginal estrogen. So I've just written a consensus document for the British Society of Sexual Medicine about management of this genitourinary syndrome of the menopause, and there's lots of treatment choices there, and that is available on my website, but also on the British Society of Sexual Medicine website, that, you know, women can download and then take it to their doctor and say, look, and there's a table with the different treatments there and the pros and cons of each. So people can say, actually, look, I would quite like a treatment. And there is one that's great. It's called Estring. It's a little vaginal ring. It's a very small, flexible ring that can be inserted in the vagina and can be last in there for 3 months. And I used to insert it a lot for women with dementia, actually, because a lot of women are actually more at risk of falls. If you can imagine, if you're going to the toilet every half an hour and your mobility is not good, your cognition isn't very good, you're more likely to fall, more likely to break a bone or whatever. And also getting up in the night, if your sleep's disrupted, you're going to be more confused the next day if you've got some dementia. So actually, these little rings would be transformational, not just for the women, but often their carers as well, because they wouldn't have to get up in the night to take them to the toilet. So it's important to think about it. And urinary tract infections in older women is very common. And we know that having vaginal estrogen can reduce the risk of recurrent urinary tract infections as well. So it's very cheap, very easy, very safe. Even women who've had breast cancer can very safely use these products, but they're just not being prescribed.
That's fascinating. I didn't realise it could help with prolapse. And I know that I've heard other people talk about it being helpful for, you know, elderly women, but I didn't realise just how helpful it could be. So thank you for filling us in and enlightening us on that. That's fascinating. Thank you so much for your time today. I know that you are busy not curing the world of menopause, but putting out the small hot flush fires of menopause that are all over the place. So thank you so much for being on My Last Eggs, Dr.
Thanks for inviting me. It's been great. Thank you.
That was Dr. Louise Newson. You can download her Balance app now through the App Store or get it on Google Play. Plus, there's a whole wealth of menopause information available on her website, menopausedoctor.co.uk. On next week's episode, we'll be talking to BBC broadcaster Paulette Edwards about her menopause journey and what it's like to talk openly about the menopause on national radio.
And I think for me, when I went into this discussion about having a chat about menopause on the radio, I thought it needs to stop being a secret. I went into Tesco on day two of the week, and a woman that I'd never met before stood at the side of me and she said, well, that's what I mean, Paulette, because my doctor was trying to put me on antidepressants and I knew it wasn't depression. She was talking to me as if we were halfway through a conversation. I wasn't prepared for just how ready we all were to have that conversation.
You can follow on My Last Eggs with new episodes released every Monday from Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get yours. And you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Do send a message. We'd love to hear from you.